Oh, hey there. Oh. We're talking to Jeff Myers about the Lego games. If you haven't played the Lego video games, there's some good ones.
Try them. They're fantastic.
Do you have any favorite video games, Dr. Jeff Myers? Are you into video games at all? Yeah. Or just old school?
Old school.
Coleco.
Okay.
Galaga.
Galaga. Okay, all right. That's Atari 2600 era. That's like 86. Yeah.
In our little town in Manatee Springs, the little hippie town right at the foot of Pikes Peak, there's an old arcade with all of the classic games.
Oh, cool. Still there.
Still there.
People still go and pay quarters.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Like actual quarters. Yeah. Like money.
That's awesome.
You put it in there and you play the old games just like you used to.
Yeah.
You know, the Galaga in my town was at the grocery store. Mm-hmm. In the lobby of the grocery store.
That's cool.
Where, you know, that's where you'd hang out and play the game.
I'm going to age myself, but we used to have an arcade at the local mall that we'd ride our bikes to. And there were Street Fighter II tournaments that would happen after school. So like the elementary school kids would be there. There'd be this long line. You'd set your quarter on there for your like next play. And whoever, there was this one kid that could win like the entire thing. There were actual fights that broke out like over this game. Like
it was Street Fighter.
It was real life.
So because you can win on the screen, you just really feel tough.
Yeah, that's right. You know, the guy that played ball, what's his name? The Russian guy.
But so did they have a rocking chair for you now there where you can like shake your cane and yell at the youngins?
That's what I need. Yeah. You know, it is.
Is that a joke about him being old?
No.
That's correct.
Half the men in my town look like Gandalf.
Oh, okay.
That's what I bet. It means to live in a hippie town.
Yeah. So lots of weed.
Lots of weed.
Smoking.
Gandalf. Try to picture Gandalf stoned.
Okay, that would be.
And that's
not hard to do.
I mean, it's pipe weed. It's not that's marijuana. Right.
There is a line in there, though, in The Lord of the Rings, where it says, what's it? The Shire Leaf has addled your mind. What is that? What's that?
That's right, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, but that's just in the movie, right? That's not in the...
Oh, you know what? You're probably
right.
The movie
made it like a
weird thing. Suduol who lived to see such times.
It has addled your mind.
Anyway. Well, in this episode, we will be imitating various characters from Lord of the Rings. That was our Gandalf segment.
Again.
Well, you're the Summit Ministries dude. Is that your official title?
That's the official title. Mm-hmm. Yeah, the one on my business card. Yeah. Huh. Yeah. So we're the ones who bring in kids who have all these irritating questions about God and reality and Jesus and how do you know the Bible's true and how does this relate to a biblical sexual ethic and you know all of those.
Did you say irritating questions like they bug you or like they? Did you say irritating?
Like, get out of here, kid!
You're like it irritates them is what you meant.
No, they irritate you. They irritate their parents, their Sunday school teachers, you know, why?
Kids are annoying. I agree.
I was always that kid growing up, though, the one asking, hey, why is this?
The good you questions. Know,
my mother didn't want to take me in the car because we'd drive past all these churches. Well, what do they believe? What do they believe? What do they believe? Why do we believe what we believe and not what they believe? You know, how do you know they're wrong? That kind of thing. Mm. But I, when I was graduating high school, I thought, church is, it's fun. It's cool. I like the people. But this is just not for me. I'm going to graduate from high school, and I'm going to graduate from church. And my parents arranged for me to go to a Summit Ministries program. Hmm. And I met David Noble. In fact, my first words to him that I remember were, I hope you have a lot of answers because I have a lot of questions. Hmm.
And so he was the previous Summit Ministries dude?
Summit Ministries dude.
Okay.
And then I didn't know what he would say. I kind of suspected he would say, look, kid, don't worry about it. We have all the answers. But what he said was, we aren't afraid of questions at Summit. Mm. Now, when all your life you've gotten the impression that the people you really like and are hanging out with are afraid of the biggest questions in life, and all of a sudden you meet a guy who isn't afraid, it's a game changer.
Mm. And that's what Summit Ministries does, like just as an overarching, you guys are the worldview kind of like, this is what a Christian worldview is. You're trying to train young adults and help them process these big questions. That's what Summit Ministry
is. Yeah. I think what's different about Summit, because you know, you've had apologetics people on board before, and you ask them a question, they have an answer. But we're trying to actually back up and ask, all right, aside from just proving that the Bible is true, why does it matter if the Bible is true? So what is a worldview? And it came about in a really odd way. I don't think a lot of people know this story publicly, so I guess, you know, here we are.
Now you will.
But I asked—
Over 30 people will know this
All
story.
30 listeners.
We're going to get 31 or 32 after this, I'm pretty sure.
We're naming and claiming it today.
35.
So David Noble had developed this worldview chart. Here's a Christian worldview. Here are counterfeit worldviews that also claim to have everything in order about reality. And he listed out these 10 areas: theology, philosophy, ethics, biology, psychology, sociology, law, politics, economics, and history. And then when I came on board, I took the textbook that he had written, rewrote it, updated it to current times, called Understanding the Times. But I never asked, where did those 10 categories come from? And so I asked him. He said, you know, when I was a college student, I heard a lecture about communism, and somebody asked me if I wanted to teach a study group, have a study group about communism. And he said that he would, but he said, I wanted to research for it. So he literally bought and read the collected works of Marx and Lenin, which if it's on your shelf is like this, okay? Those guys wrote a lot. And he said, I was reading in the collected works of Marx and Lenin, as one does as a college student. Yeah.
Especially now.
And he said, I saw Marx say, if we're going to win, we have to take over theology. If we're going to win, we have to take over philosophy and sociology. And he listed out all these 10 different areas. And he said, my question was, do Christians realize this? Do we have any sense of what our worldview says about all these areas? And that set him on a search to discover what a biblical Christian worldview is, and then
based on the categories that Marx had kind of developed, like Marx and Lenin had developed.
Yeah, those 10 categories that I just listed were all the areas where Karl Marx and Lenin, they were both thinking way ahead, that if we want to control the world, we have to first of all control all of these academic disciplines. And it goes back to, you know, like 1984, if you can control what people think, then you can control what they do.
Yeah. So that's one of the major worldviews that you guys talk about at some ministries. I know that you go through a bunch. There was the book that you wrote a few years ago called The Secret Battle of Ideas About God, right? Yeah. So it's a booklet. It's really easy to read, really accessible for young adults.
Even Jarrett was able to
even I was and
did you pass the test?
I have recommended, well, I have a much, there's a test in there that he's referring to that I think it's a worldview test, right? It's kind of like, are you, what percentage?
I wasn't just joking, there literally is a test,
right? Yeah. It's like, what percentage of your worldview is Christian, if you're calling yourself a Christian, is that right? Or like, where does it,
yeah, that's what it is. So we just asked a bunch of different questions. What do you believe about this or that?
Yeah.
And, you know, it's questions like, the root of society's problems is that the rich oppress the poor, you know, kinds of questions. If you agree with that, then that tells us that you've had some Marxist influences. There's different things. And at the end of it, you can kind of look and see what your worldview influences are. I'm not trying to put anybody in a box. I just want to give you a starting point for, hey, your worldview may have been influenced by a lot more people than you realize.
Well, and it's true. And I think I ended up coming back like 98% Christian or something like that. But like,
2% Mormon.
2%. I got to
figure out.
See, that's
exactly where I was going with it. Yeah. Okay. All right.
It's like The Chosen, where
what's
they did
your
that
98% Christian, 2% Mormon.
You're two.
Just like The Chosen.
Just like The Chosen. Well, because they just did that third Nephi quote or whatever.
You're 98%. You're only 2% genetically modified.
That's right.
Yeah.
Which is actually not true. I should probably correct myself. It was not necessarily a quote from 3rd Nephi. He was just, anyway. Yeah. It wasn't an exact quote. Anyway. Yeah. So anyway.
It's actually a quote from Judge Dredd. He said, I am the law.
Yeah. That's right.
Yeah. Mm.
That's a better reference.
And Anthrax,
now, how much Judge Dredd influences in The Chosen?
It's true. They're very influential. Yeah,
that's very. Anyway, so Summit Ministries.
Do you watch The Chosen?
I watched The Chosen. I just never picked up the.
Oh, do you like it?
The influence.
The Judge Dredd.
It's because I'm only 96%.
Yeah. Oh, you're 96% Christian.
I think I was 98. Oh, you're actually 98. Since I wrote the questions, I knew the answers.
You knew the answers.
And you still only got 98.
But the majority of young adults are something like 60%, right? If you're a Christian.
So yeah, 55%. It turns out most Christians are somewhere between 20 And if they're, you know, if they're in an evangelical church where they really take the Bible seriously and get a lot of teaching, which is about a third of the churches in America right now, they might be up to 60% or so. But the average is only 20%. So yes, if you've got 10 people in a pew pre-COVID, because you wouldn't put 10 people in a pew, you would have two of them who get, we're here to study the Bible to see what God has to say so that we can obey it. The other eight are like, I'm here to hear God's opinion on this and see if his truth matches up with my truth. So it's more self-centered, but more just like, yeah, I'm curious. I'm interested to hear what you have to say. I don't have any sense of responsibility to pay attention to what you say is true. So that's sort of where the culture has seeped in. Because we passed the tipping point. And that's what in this book, Truth Changes Everything, that I just wrote, the thing that scared me about it was...
Oh, it took 13 minutes to get to the book pitch. Truth Changes Everything by Dr. Joseph
Meyer.
How people of faith can transform the world in times of crisis. Go check it out.
Right next to my...
Yeah. Please continue.
I claim that copy.
I wasn't really trying to interrupt you.
That copy is mine.
That one's yours?
It's 13 minutes a record.
It's a record, yeah. I think.
Usually Kyle gets right into it, yeah.
The book? Yeah. Yeah. Sometimes I forget, and then we get to the end, and I'm like, oh, yeah, and they have a book.
By the way, it's been sitting here.
Which well, it's a tipping point. That's all I was getting at, is that you've got to the place where now more people than not say the goal is to seek your truth, or speak your truth rather than seek the truth. And so no civilization that I've ever studied has ever come back from that unless they reclaimed some understanding of what's actually true.
Are there civilizations that have done that, reclaimed and gone back?
Lots of them.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah, actually lots of them.
Tell me more.
It's happened many times.
Name five.
Well, let me go back to Europe in the 1300s when you that just sounds weird as a transition statement, but
yeah.
Yeah.
Let's all go back. That's what they did in Army of Darkness.
Come on a journey with me.
Anyway.
In the world. So a third to a half of the people in Europe died from the Black Death. And you would think if there ever was a time when you would say, look, clearly God has abandoned us. What more evidence do we need? But instead, they said they moved closer to God. Hmm. And you saw, first of all, you started to see care. People cared for others. So a lot of people were running away from the sick. A lot of the Christians there were running toward them, like Catherine of Siena. Why would you run toward the sick rather than away from them? And she said, because Jesus sits with the suffering and I want to be with Jesus, so I sit with the suffering. So it changed medical care. Then it changed economics. If a third to half of the people die, that resets the whole economic situation. Everyday workers can make more money because there aren't as many of them. So then now all of a sudden they become the landowners, and it leads all the way to the place where you move from, you know, the king is the law to now the law is the king. So was there a political aspect to it? There was a scientific aspect to it because people were saying, I think God has given us the ability to understand not only the body, but everything else. So let's make all these observations. We know there's a moral law. Let's see if we can figure out if there are actual physical laws too. So science transformed. That's probably the clearest example that I can think of. Over a course of a couple hundred years, the whole landscape of Europe changed because people didn't say, forget God, he's abandoned us. They said, no, he's right here suffering with us. How would we live differently knowing that? Hmm.
So I see you're still rocking the faux hawk. You don't see that very often anymore.
That's is that right?
Yeah.
So I went through cancer and all my hair fell out I wanted to make you feel guilty for bringing that up. So it grew back curly on the sides, straight up on top. So I thought, you know, rock what you got.
Cool. Well, I wasn't criticizing. It kind of makes a summit. That's where I was going.
It's like a summit.
The summit of hair.
Yeah. Summit Ministries. See how
See that?
Jared, you ask a question.
Well, I was interested. You wrote this book.
You look more like you had cancer than he did.
I do. I do. He's in great shape.
You look
I'm
like
excuse
that,
myself for the rest of the day.
So the one guy here with great hair gets to sort of dominate the conversation.
Yeah.
How was
the
cancer experience? Was that, I mean, I'm assuming it was bad, but.
Well, it was. So when I got the diagnosis, doctor said, we have a really good chance to beat this, but the treatment is brutal.
Yeah.
Yeah. So a lot of people go in for chemo and have 12 hours of
chemo. That's crazy.
I had 66 hours of chemo.
Just straight.
Yeah. Straight through 4 months.
That's insane.
Sort of feels like having the 24-hour flu for four straight months.
Jeez. That's rough.
But there were so many amazing things that came out of it. You know, I told a friend, I said, I wouldn't trade it. I wouldn't want to do it again, but I wouldn't trade it. And he said, really? Because I would trade it in a heartbeat
if it were me. Me too. Yeah. I mean, yeah.
And I thought, yeah, it kind of sounded cliche when I said that. But what I meant was when your whole life gets compressed into this thought of, hey, this might be the last time I get to talk to this person. This might be the last letter I get to write. This might be the last book I get to write. Then all of a sudden, the meaning of every day is more profound.
Yeah.
So
anyway, but now I'm 13 months now in remission from that.
Praise God.
Praise God.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Well, you look good.
Yeah.
Like you have a nice arms and stuff. Are you, do you like hike and bike and stuff? What do you?
I am the Colorado.
Guy. That's what you look like.
So you're an outdoorsy guy.
Yeah. Do you, what do you eat? Are you like a keto guy or?
Oh, yeah. Well, no, I don't really do.
Oh, okay.
After cancer?
Oh, yeah.
I eat whatever I want.
Yeah.
Yeah, if it sounds good.
Sounds good. I'm eating it.
You know, eat it. I want to feel good, but yeah, I really moved away from all that crazy measuring all of your calories. And
yeah. We're both doing the same diet right now. And it's hard.
Oh, yeah.
The
Noom thing.
Noom.
Which is?
Noom.
Well, it's, yeah, I'm kind of doing like a keto light sort of situation. Yeah.
It's good energy.
I mean, is it helping? Cabbage.
Yeah. I've lost 25 pounds. So, yeah. Yeah.
Wow. I've lost about 25 or 30
I lost 31.
How many foreign languages 32. Have you learned in the process?
None. Zero.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. Sad.
So I want to come back to your book because I'm interested. So you wrote this book, Truth Changes Everything. And in it, you say that, you know, and it's some of what you said earlier about the percentages of belief system. What are the ones that you see that young Christians are sort of like gravitating towards more than others? Or is there a particular worldview that they're sort of latching onto and like blending with their Christianity to create this new form, this new worldview?
That's actually a really interesting observation because it's so hard to say. We don't have one dominant worldview. What you've kind of got is a cafeteria approach.
Right.
So when it comes to issues of gender identity, people usually think of their physical bodies and their mental states as a physical state. So if I feel in my mind that I am a girl, then I am a girl regardless of what my body says. But at the same time, I can make my body adjust using chemicals and surgery to conform with my expectation. So it's very much a materialist, secularist kind of thing. Yeah. At the same time, you have people saying, I think we should have the government do everything for us. That's should be 100% of our lives. They should take care of all of our healthcare and forgive our student loans and raise the minimum wage and all these kinds of things that the manipulating of government, which is kind of this weird like convergence Marxist of secularism kind of. And Marxism. Yes. And you can understand why somebody would believe that. I mean, if you went off to college hearing, oh, you're going to get a great job, even if you major in, you know, sociology or whatever. And then you're now all of a sudden working at a minimum wage job, but you still have $150,000 in student loans. You're going to be mad. You're going to feel like you got ripped off. And you did get ripped off.
Yeah.
Because somebody didn't help you understand reality.
Right.
But the big one right now, and I know, Kyle, you wrote about Postmodern Pilgrim's Progress, which I haven't read yet. I just saw it on the shelf.
I haven't read your book either.
You're reading it right now.
I'm looking through it right now.
That book will probably be gone from your shelf next time you come on set.
He claimed it.
You know how postmodernists are.
Yeah, that's true.
Name it, claim it. But that's really where we are. The idea that, look, there's no reality out there that can be known. Maybe it's there, but it's not something we could know. That's a very old idea that goes all the way back to the Sophists, all the way back to ancient Greece, a guy named Gorgias, who sold arguments for a living, which sounds crazy.
That is crazy.
But you would, if you had to go to court, you have to buy arguments, you know? And I just kind of picture this guy out there. Hey, man.
Yeah. Hawking is weird.
Buy an argument. Yeah. You know, first one's free.
Hey, my name's Gorgias.
Yeah.
Gorgias. Here's a new argument.
That's right. Come see me, I'll set you up.
Yeah, that's right.
But he sold arguments, and his basic belief was there's nothing can be known. Even if it can be known, it can't be communicated. Even if it can be communicated, it can't be understood. Which none of which makes any sense if what he's saying is true, right? Because he's assuming that his words are meaningful enough to make you think that they're meaningless. But that postmodern mindset seems to be kind of a dominant one. I'll do me, you do you. I'll speak my truth.
And even in Christian circles, you're talking about, you know, this is just the young adults. Are you seeing this kind of progressive Christianity is the kind of way that we describe it?
Right.
A lot. So are you encountering a lot of progressive Christianity, a lot of people that have read progressive Christian stuff? And
you know, a lot of the students I work with, their questions are just straight up skeptical.
They're
how
just
do you
more,
know there's a God?
Honest,
yeah. How do we know creation is really real? Is there such a thing as truth? Because why is it so hard to find if it's so obvious? Those are the kinds of questions that they are asking. Mm. When they get out, depending on who they encounter, maybe in college or after, they might come back and say, yeah, I'm sort of in this progressive Christian mindset. But a lot of progressive Christianity, it departs from regular Orthodox Christianity over the question of who Jesus is. I mean, you just have to ask the question, what did Jesus come to earth to do? Did he come to earth to make you feel better about yourself?
Right.
Did he come to earth to empower you, to be a revolutionary, to stand up against the forces of the world? Did he come to save you? Mm-hmm. And you'll get a lot of information. What about you does Jesus want to transform? Is a question that I'll ask a lot of students who've been influenced by that progressive Christian.
Yeah, and what
mindset.
Do they say? They would say probably nothing, right? They would say, he doesn't want to transform anything.
Oh, I want him
myself,
to.
Myself, right?
Yeah, I can't. Well, I want. So what we all want is a Jesus who will do for us only what we want him to do and leave everything else alone.
Yeah.
And that's kind of the problem, is that if you custom make your own Christianity that way, then what you've got doesn't serve any purpose.
And what is that? It's kind of like theistic moral. What is it? Moralistic theistic deism or whatever that.
Yeah. So this guy named Christian Smith from the University of Notre Dame came up with this term, moralistic therapeutic deism.
Therapeutic. That was the word I was looking for.
Yeah, and it is kind of like that.
Yeah.
So a lot of my students, they're just genuinely good kids. They're getting my students when they come to study with my team and me at Summit Ministries. They're usually on their way to college. More than half the group is. They just graduate high school. They're on their way to college. And they are genuinely wanting to be good people. But if you probe a little bit, you find out they kind of want to be good as sort of making a deal with God. Look, I will be good. You don't hurt me. That's the deal, right? Are we agreed? That's kind of where they want to settle things with God. And so to go beyond that and say, you know, this faith of ours gives us a thought system as well as a system of life to make sense of everything. And what do you have to lose, really? I mean, 75% of young adults say they have no sense of purpose that gives them meaning in life. Half say they regularly struggle with anxiety and depression. Are the worldviews that you're paying attention to serving you in any meaningful way? You know, why not have a look? And that's the compelling part where it's, most of the students will say, I'm with you. Let's have a look.
Well, that seems like the kind of overarching idea that you're dealing with is that the Christian worldview applies. Arching?
I think it might be overarching.
Well, I mean, the overarching idea that
am I right?
Christianity applies to everything.
Am I wrong? Is it overarching?
I think you're wrong.
Okay.
No, it's
depending on.
I might be wrong. I don't know.
No, I don't
what
know.
Is your should, truth?
Let's look it up.
It's overarching, but I.
So I have a couple questions for you. You have a lot of end notes. Did you consider doing footnotes instead of end notes? Or was that like a publisher decision? I tend to prefer footnotes, you know.
Because you can then look at the source. Because
you can look
right
at it right away.
Away
instead of like flipping to the
back. Most people are not like you, Kyle.
Really? I think most people like footnotes.
No, that's an illusion.
Leave a comment below and let us know if you like footnotes. And also, so you quote.
People like to have them available. They like to know that there's a citation there, but they don't really want to know what it is. They're just trying to get the over.
Or at least the end of the chapter. You know, I like that. Because then I can like look.
Yeah, I like those better too.
I like end of the chapter.
So you quote a lot of scholarly sources in here, including Avengers Infinity War, directed by Anthony Russo and Joe Russo, Walt Disney.
The Russo brothers.
Russo philosopher team.
Do you remember why you quoted Infinity War in your book?
Yeah, I do.
Why?
Yeah. Well, there was a scene where Thanos is talking to Gamora and she's confronting him about killing half of all of the people of the entire universe. And he says, it's a good thing that we did that. It's better because the people whose lives remain are better. And I'm pointing out that.
I think he hadn't killed the population yet in Infinity War because that was an endgame. But in Infinity War, she was talking to him about all the people on her planet because he killed half the people on Gamora's planet.
Planet, yes.
Okay.
That's where
it's we minor are. Correction.
Yeah, thank you.
It was the scene right before he killed her.
And this is how we know that you were correct about overarching rather than overarching.
Yeah.
Leave a comment and let us know if it's overarching or overarching.
Right. I could be wrong. I don't know.
So Paul Romer is an economist who, not coming at this as a believer, but a Nobel Prize winning economist, said people are the solution, not the problem. Which I was in the book trying to demonstrate that our whole concept that we have that people are valuable came from Christians, Jesus followers, who believed that Jesus is the truth, which is the big distinctive for Christianity. Christians are not just saying there is truth and we can demonstrate it through logical propositions. There is truth because we can demonstrate through mathematical formulas that model accurately the universe that we know exists. They're saying truth exists and it's a person. It's Jesus. And once you start with that, those people are the ones who actually brought about all of the amazing changes in the world in science, politics, justice, every area that I looked at. But
we're going back to this talk about truth being relative, and I always go back to C.S. Lewis's Abolition of Man, where I don't know if you quote that alongside Avengers Infinity War in your book.
I would.
Yeah.
C.S. Lewis is pretty cool.
I think it's cooler
than Avengers, actually.
Cooler than Thanos.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's true.
Yeah.
But he talks, don't leave
comments on that.
But he talks about how, you know, it used to be that education was to take, malleable young people and teach them that there's a truth and a standard outside themselves they have to align themselves with. And if they see something wrong in themselves, it's, how do I change that to align myself to this? And then now it's like, we don't have that anymore. Now it's, what is your standard? You find your own standard and then live up to that within yourself. My first grader came home and he was telling me that they're learning about facts and opinions. And he's like, so I'm asking him which one's a fact and an opinion. And I said, okay. Is the sunset beautiful? You know, and this was C.S. Lewis's argument about the waterfall. He's the sunset beautiful. He's like, that's an opinion. And I'm like, no, that's a fact. Right. So I'm going to go argue with the teacher now.
Yeah, it's so, you want to stay in touch with that because it is when teachers teach about facts and opinions, it's different than when I went to school.
Yeah,
sure.
We can acknowledge there are certain facts. At least I could when I was growing up, like scientific facts. So if I say water boils at 212 degrees Fahrenheit at sea level, you might say, it might be 211, 213, depending on atmospheric conditions. But you wouldn't say, keep your opinions to yourself. But when I was growing up, people would say, moral statements are opinions.
Right, right.
So if you say Jesus rose from the dead, that is an opinion. That is not a statement of fact. But even moral statements, if you think about it, we know the difference between two options. If I say A, it is good to care for abandoned puppies, and B, it is good to torture abandoned puppies, we know there is a meaningful difference between those two statements, which tells us something about the nature of truth. But a lot of students today are being taught that not only are there no moral truths, that your moral viewpoints are all opinions, but the facts about the physical world are opinions.
Yeah.
Which I think is mind-blowing. But it goes back to, and you probably have heard about this Oregon mathematics program based in what they call ethnomathematics. Mm. There was a professor named Melville Herskovitz from Northwestern University who said, even the facts of the physical world are processed through our what he called enculturative screen, which means that it's up to you. What does your culture say? Is it 3,000 miles from New York to London? Well, it depends on your perspective, right? Depends on your opinion. It's only a matter of opinion. And somehow reality just doesn't sink down to these people. My only recommendation is, even if you think it's only 200 miles from New York to London, bring enough gas on the airplane for 3,000 miles just in case, right?
Right, just in case.
But it has gotten to that place. So I'll be interested to hear how that conversation goes with the first grader. I'll let you know. Yeah.
Coming up next for Babylon Bee subscribers.
But as soon as they figured out that it was heliocentric, that it was the sun at the center of the universe, their math started to work out.
The sun is not the center of the universe.
Well, the sun is the center of the... Yeah, you're right. It's not the center of the universe. But when they figured out that everything's rotating around the sun...
But the sun, capital S, is...
The sun. You get what I'm saying. Jesus is the middle. We're not the middle.
Overarching. Yeah.
This has been another edition of the Bee Weekly from the dedicated team of certified fake news journalists you can trust here at the Babylon Bee, reminding you that someone out there knows something about Carmen, and we're going to find them.